Chapter 6, Gluts and Lacks. In this chapter, we're going to cover the gluts and the lacks, as I call them. In other words, things that are lacking versus the glut, things that are in oversupply. And you're going to see this exacerbated over the next several years as the post-vaccine die-off accelerates. I just want you to think about this in terms of where you're putting your own assets, what expenditures you might be planning that you might put off because prices are going to change radically. And also, as we go through this list, keep in mind the geographic location of where these die-off effects are going to be most pronounced. And we covered that in previous chapters. But let's cover the gluts now here. And this is not a complete list, obviously. Going to be a lot of other things in very large supply for quite some time. So there will be a glut of commercial real estate and residential real estate. Lots of homes, lots of buildings available, especially in the blue cities. There's going to be a glut of used vehicles. We've already covered that. Going to be a glut of infrastructure, roads to maintain, street lights, bridges, and so on. And we've also covered how there's going to be a large number of orphaned human children and pets as well that are going to need to be adopted. So look for a sharp uptick in the adoption organizations trying to find new homes for children and for pets. It's going to be a glut of airplanes and ocean container ships, as well as the containers themselves, a glut of cruise ships and transport vehicles. So this is something we haven't covered yet. Think about how right now there's a shortage of ocean shipping vessels. And even though they're running 24/7, it seems, there's just not enough for all the demand of all the consumer goods, which has been driven, by the way, by COVID stimulus money handouts, which means money printing. So that's also a temporary thing. But as this die-off accelerates, consumer demand for the consumer goods will plummet. And then suddenly there's going to be a glut of all of these ships and containers, including cruise ships. So I would imagine there's going to be an industry of converting cruise ships into something else. I don't know exactly what they might be converted into. Maybe hospitals? I'm not sure. But they're going to be used for something different than what they're being used for now. Who's going to take a cruise when, most of the people who go on these cruises are people who take vaccines, and then they're going to die in large numbers. So watch for that change. There's going to be a glut of power production. This is something that not a lot of people have considered. So there will be too many nuclear power plants, too many coal-fired power plants, too many solar farms and wind farms and so on. Because with the die-off, there'll be a drastic reduction in energy consumption. And then as a result, you're going to have to mothball a lot of these facilities, but you're also going to be missing the people who know how to do that because they died too, or many of them did. So you're going to have a glut of oil all over the world because, again, related to energy, smaller population, less consumption, less transportation, and so on. You won't need nearly as much oil as you have now, so there's going to be a plunging in oil prices over the next several years. It's going to get cheap. I don't know how cheap, but just taking a wild guess, I'm no oil expert, but I could see it hitting something like $30 a barrel. And I know that seems crazy because it's much higher than that right now. But think about it. The oil-producing countries still want to keep producing the oil because they need the revenue. And yet, the number of buyers is dwindling rapidly. So there's going to be big changes in the energy industry. And that also means there's going to be a glut of oil wells. So we should expect oil companies to try to find a way to efficiently shut down even offshore drilling platforms. They won't need as much oil. And actually, it's the oil price that's going to drive this. Once oil falls below $50 a barrel, these companies are going to be forced to shutter a lot of these operations just because they'll be losing money at that point. All right, we're going to see a glut of farming equipment, tractors and such, the plows and the planters and the harvesters and combines and balers and everything. And then you're also going to see a glut of ranch animals, at least for some period of time. So you'll have a lot of beef supply in the marketplace temporarily. So you'll see beef prices slowly go down, 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 because so many ranchers and farmers are dying off. Those animals are being sent to slaughter because no one can take care of them, and that's going to drive beef prices down. But after that's over, beef prices are going to skyrocket because there'll be fewer cows, you know, less beef entering the supply chain at that point. And the short-term lower prices won't last for long. Okay, there's going to be a glut of construction equipment. All the equipment that builds highways, you know, the excavators, the rollers, all that different equipment, the Caterpillar equipment. And companies like Caterpillar are going to get hammered because there won't be much worldwide demand for their equipment since no one's building anything. Although there may be some demand for, you know, tearing down infrastructure. So I would expect to see a higher demand for those types of vehicles and equipment that are used to demolish concrete and demolish buildings and so on. Okay, firefighting equipment, same deal. So as cities shut down the firehouses, you're going to have a glut of fire engines and other firefighting equipment. It's going to be a very big secondhand market for used fire engines. There's going to be a market for, you know, secondhand ambulances, police cars, which are not good to buy, by the way, because the cops abuse the heck out of them. I know from firsthand experience working with the police foundation. Never buy a used cop car. They have been treated the worst. And all you cops listening, you know that. You know what you do to those cars. Yep. It's going to be a glut of hospitals as well for eventually. I mean, after the die-off, you know, during the die-off, obviously, there's going to be not enough hospital beds. But as the die-off wanes, and this might be closer to 8, 9 years out, even 10 years out, you're going to find yourself living in a world where there are far too many hospitals, far too many hospital beds, and they're going to be shutting down the physical infrastructure. Now, what's fascinating about this is that at the same time there are too many hospitals, there won't be enough personnel. So we will have a sustained shortage of doctors and nurses, even though you have more than enough beds and hospitals at some point down the road. And that's going to be difficult to deal with, obviously. You're going to have a glut of military equipment. This is a big deal. So even in the United States military, since you've had mass vaccinations across the military, you're going to have a big die-off of, you know, active duty servicemen and women. You're going to end up with a lot of extra equipment that no one can operate. And you're going to end up with a recruiting problem because there won't be as many people living to recruit into the military. And besides, with a very high likelihood of wars breaking out around the world, who's going to want to join the military? Not as many people as before. A lot of people join the military to get the training and the free college or whatever they're offering. And they don't want to go to war, especially a world war. But if world war is breaking out, then it might be very difficult to recruit people. So watch for the military to try to offload a lot of this equipment. And the way that often works is they will donate through federal grants. They'll donate, you know, bomb-resistant armored vehicles like APCs and so on to local police departments. Right. The militarization of local police could accelerate under this scenario. I'm expecting it will. Okay, you're going to have a glut of firearms because so many people who own them will die. And as a result, it's going to be relatively inexpensive to purchase common firearms such as AR-15s or hunting rifles or Glocks or 9mm pistols, that kind of thing. And this will be part of the salvage operations that I mentioned earlier. Firearms will be recovered from a lot of homes of vaccine-killed people. And then those firearms will go into the secondhand market. You're going to have, at first, a glut of consumer goods on the shelves as the ships come in and get offloaded and restock shelves with fewer people living to purchase those products, it's going to seem like a glut on the shelves for a temporary period of time. But at some point that flips because you won't have as much production because of the die-off in China and other places around the world. That is, if China has been giving their people the depopulation vaccines, and we're not entirely sure about that. But due to the global economic collapse situation, there are going to be other attacks on China's trade. And so we expect exports from China to be severely limited a couple of years into this. So at that point, shelves are going to go bare, and they're going to stay bare for a long time. So that's a glut that will be transformed into a scarcity pretty quickly. Okay, we're also going to see a lot of ghost towns, and this is why I called this short book here Ghost World. So if you think about what's going to look like a ghost town, it's going to be a lot of universities that are practically empty, many neighborhoods, shopping malls, apartment buildings, cruise ships, even highways will be less densely occupied, parking lots. You know, you're going to have a lot of areas that used to have many, many people, and they will no longer have them. And in some cases, it's going to be these blue cities where people are just fleeing, trying to get out of there. So think about what that means for local retail. Think about what that means for crime and crime prevention, 911 response, and so on. A lot of these areas are going to be completely abandoned by law enforcement. They just simply will not respond. All right, so that's kind of a list of the gluts. Now let's take a look at the lacks, or things that are going to be lacking in this ghost world post-die-off economy. All right, if you're taking a look at what's going to be lacking in society because of the ghost world die-off, we've mentioned these things throughout the book, but let's just kind of aggregate it here. We're going to have a lack of property taxes, income taxes, and other types of taxes that fund cities and counties and states. There's going to be a lack of consumers and TV viewers, moviegoers, customers, and so on. So reduced demand for everything that people buy, from clothing to cars to electricity, you name it, food, etc. There's going to be a lack of personnel to run the infrastructure, which includes hospitals, transportation, power grid, first responders, municipal administrators, everything you can think of. Also, there's going to be a lack of doctors and nurses and healthcare workers for all the reasons we've covered here. Most of them were vaccinated. Many of them will die. And others will just refuse to participate in this mass die-off once it becomes apparent what's happening. They just don't want any part of it. We're also going to have a lack of military personnel, again, because they're being mass vaccinated. And that is a deliberate attack against America to try to kill off our soldiers and reduce our national defense readiness. We'll have a lack of women. This is something that not a lot of people have thought about, but if you look at the vaccine side effects and who's hurt the most, it turns out it's about 2-to-1 women to men. And I don't know why this is, but this is what's being borne out in the data. So 2 women harmed or hospitalized for every 1 man. And I don't know what the death statistics are showing, but I know that the hospitalizations and injuries are affecting a lot more women than men. So it's very possible that the deaths would reflect that as well. We do know that fertility is harmed in both cases, but female fertility is a lot more delicate or more complex than male fertility. You have to have a lot of things going right in a woman's body for a long period of time, you know, over 9 months of gestation, for a baby to be healthy and to be born fully intact and healthy and so on. Whereas, you know, the man only has to have good chromosomes for one moment. So the fact that these spike proteins and injections are going to be harming pregnant women, because they're being, of course, pushed onto pregnant women, this means that we're going to have greatly reduced birth rates. So there's a lack of people for the next generation as well. This also means, of course, we're going to have a lack of neighbors, which may be a good thing or a bad thing, depending on your neighbors. There's going to be a lack of population density, going to be a lack of students in the schools. I mean, just across the board, think about everywhere that people are, there will be fewer people there. Now, the exception to this might be very desirable areas in red states, you know, rural areas where everybody's going to try to move out to. You could actually see increases in population density in those areas. But for the typical urban areas where you see a lot of people out shopping, you know, driving on the freeways, at the airports, and so on, those numbers are going to be reduced quite dramatically. Now, there may be some secondary benefits to all of this, such as the lack of personnel to keep 5G towers up and running. It wouldn't be a bad thing for humanity if a lot of 5G towers could not be maintained, right? Maybe they just stop working, or maybe they have to be taken down, or what have you. So a lot of the global surveillance state will contract. There's going to be a lack of computing personnel to keep a lot of high-tech systems running, lack of personnel to install and maintain cameras that are surveillance cameras in the cities and so on, lack of personnel to run a lot of federal agencies that are Orwellian type of agencies. You can think of many examples, but the IRS, for example, or the FBI, or I don't know, ATF, or any of them, there's just going to be fewer people to run these things. And so there's going to be an automatic contraction of government just due to the lack of personnel. And then ultimately, as this plays out, you're going to have eventually a lack of products, a lack of supplies, a lack of parts. Even though for some of these categories, such as used vehicles, remember, there's going to be a glut in the short term, followed by scarcity for the long run. Because, of course, there'll be fewer people running parts manufacturing operations or importing of parts or even marketing them and so on. Basically, you're just going to get a global contraction of economies. So what's this going to do to the GDP of all these countries around the world? Well, every country that has been targeted with these depopulation weapons is going to see a very sharp contraction in gross domestic product. And if you lose, let's say, on average, just as an estimate here, 20 to 25% of the total population, it wouldn't be unreasonable to conclude you'd lose 20 to 25% of the GDP. So when you start to look at contraction in financial systems, which is related to GDP, then you have to really watch out, because now you're talking about a contraction of the derivatives instruments, which are highly, highly leveraged, a contraction of the money supply eventually, although the government will try to probably print its way out of this and it will flood the money supply in the short term, ultimately destroying it. And then after that, you're going to have very powerful deflation. And I probably didn't cover that sufficiently yet in this book, but the long-term deflationary aspects of this are going to be absolutely catastrophic to the economies of the world. So remember, when you're looking at a global economic contraction, you're looking at the destruction of leveraged money, or the destruction of wealth, the destruction of leverage. You're basically going to see an unwinding of the leverage that we have lived under for many decades right now in a global bubble market based on debt. And debt, remember this, the only way to solve debt in the long run, other than paying it off, which has never been an option for the big spending governments of the world, the only way to pay off debt is to grow the economy and grow the money supply, and thereby make the debt smaller and smaller compared to the rising or expanding GDP. And when you're growing the money supply, you're causing inflation, and through inflation, you're actually reducing the difficulty of paying off previous debt. So the more devalued dollars are, the easier it is to acquire dollars to pay off previous debts. And this is true at a national level with treasuries and so on. So as long as economies are growing, everything looks fine, and you can sort of explain away the national debt and government spending programs, stimulus, money creation, all of these things. When the growth stops, then you have a real crisis, because then suddenly the debt matters. And when you start to go into a global deflation scenario, what happens is the debt that you still owe becomes more difficult to pay off, because the debt of the past becomes more valuable than the dollars of the present. Or maybe the best way to describe this is that your dollars are now becoming worth more and more as time goes on. And since your debt in the past is denominated in dollars, then you're going to have to expend more resources in the present to pay off the dollar-denominated debt in the past. And this is true whether it's dollars or other forms of fiat currency. In other words, the easy way to look at this is, if you have inflation moving forward, you're making past debts easier to pay off. If you have deflation moving forward, then past debts are becoming more expensive to pay off. And since we are in a nation now here in America with, what, almost $30 trillion in debt, if we start to enter a deflationary period, which will happen with the die-off, this is going to be not just catastrophic, but terminally catastrophic. It will end the dollar supremacy that we have all lived under our entire lives. It will end the United States government as we know it. The U.S. government cannot function without either a stable population or a slightly increasing population with an increasing GDP. Once things start to go down the deflationary path, it's over for this whole system. They can no longer just print money and bail everything out. Now, there's another very important phenomenon to observe in all of this as we are headed into eventually a deflationary period. During inflation, people like to spend money very rapidly because they know that their dollars are going to be worth less in the future than they're worth today in the present. So they would rather convert their dollars to things that they can store and use in the near future, such as food or fuel or used cars or clothing or what have you. And that's a rational choice to make when there is inflation. But when deflation is underway, and this means wages are falling and prices are falling, in a deflationary period, it is rational to postpone your purchases until the very last moment that you need those items for consumption. Because, of course, you would postpone because those items are becoming less expensive in the future due to deflation. So your dollars are going to be worth more in the future than they're worth today, or any fiat currency for that matter. Therefore, the velocity of money plummets during deflation. So money velocity is the speed at which money changes hands. You take the same $100, let's say, and track how often it's used in trade or exchange in a thriving city. During an inflationary period, everybody's trying to get rid of that $100. And so they're going to spend it very quickly. And then whoever gets that money is going to try to spend it as well. And money velocity goes through the roof. And this is very beneficial for central banks and their money printing schemes, MMT, for example, which I call magical monetary theory. But the opposite happens during deflation. Suddenly, money velocity plummets, people hold on to their dollars, and they choose to postpone spending. And what happens to the GDP? It, of course, craters. And so this becomes a self-reinforcing negative feedback loop that crushes money velocity in an economy, causes sales to fall, causes the GDP to fall, and this causes then salaries to fall even more, which puts more downward pressure on consumer prices and so on and so forth. And this is financial suicide for a debt-based government that has been riding on money printing. This means total destruction, and the Federal Reserve is more terrified of deflation than anything else. They don't mind inflation. Deflation is their mortal enemy. And yet, I say they won't be able to stop deflation once the die-off accelerates, because there just won't be enough people still living to keep pumping up the economy. There won't be enough people to keep buying things. And in order to fight this deflation, what the Federal Reserve is going to do, this is almost a certainty, is they're going to try to find very creative ways to stimulate the economy, to pump money into the pockets and hands of as many people as possible, to try to encourage more demand and more spending and increase money velocity. So you can expect them to push things like universal basic income. They might even try something pretty radical, like refunding all the federal taxes that you paid over the last year or 2 years or 5 years. You say, whoa, why would they return all our tax money? Well, answer number one is they don't need your tax money, and they never did. They could always print the money they needed. But secondly, they're trying to stimulate artificial consumer behavior. And so they'll find every way possible to push money into your bank accounts and get you to go out and spend. And they did this, by the way, in early 2020. The first COVID stimulus package, which was a Trump package, was astonishing. I remember going out to eat one time. I don't remember what month it was, but it was in 2020. It was after the first stimulus went out. And apparently the stimulus went out onto debit cards, or like little cards that were mailed to people. And you could go out and you could spend on these cards. You could go out to eat. The restaurant was packed with people. And I asked one of the waiters, I'm like, what's going on? Like, I thought the restaurant would be mostly empty here today, but it's packed full of people. And he said, oh, everybody's using their stimulus money. And sure enough, I looked around, everybody was paying on these stimulus cards. That was the government pumping money into the hands of people. And then people just went out and they spent it. They went shopping. They went to restaurants. I remember seeing news stories talking about this, how some people use the money to go hire prostitutes and go to pole dancing bars. And then there were stories of people use the stimulus money to buy guns. You know, I mean, you put money into people's hands, everybody's going to make a different choice of how to use it. You know, I went to eat at a restaurant. Other people bought hookers. You know, this is just different people do different things with free money, right? So you're going to see a lot of that, a lot of money being pumped into people's hands. Now, what's that going to create in the marketplace? Scarcity of products. Scarcity. Because you can't print the products that people need. You can print money, but you can't print groceries, right? You can't print plumbing supplies. You can't print copper wire for electrical infrastructure. You can't print tires for vehicles. So the entire approach of just printing money to solve all these problems is really papering over this issue, trying to create the impression of a booming economy, when in reality, we're going to go through incredible scarcity of products, the products that we need for day-to-day living. So if you think about gluts versus lacks or scarcity, you're going to have a glut of money probably coming from the central banks, but a lack of products to spend the money on, or very, very long wait times. And with all the extra money out there, there will be a lot of competition to purchase these scarce items, and that's going to drive up prices. So that's the upward force on the prices that's trying to counteract the deflationary force on prices. And that's the whole point of why the Fed is printing money. They want to drive prices up. They want money to move up in velocity. They want people to spend, 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 because it's all a debt-based, consumer-based economy. And in this economy, this is why scavenging operations will make so much economic sense, because anything that you can scavenge out of a home or an apartment or a commercial building is going to be very valuable in the context of product scarcity across the economy due to all the money printing and stimulus. I hope that all makes sense, but it's all interrelated. It's a dynamic financial ecosystem, and it's very clear to me that when push comes to shove, the government prints money, or technically the central banks print money. So they're going to try to print their way out of this. Ultimately, it's going to fail. And that's how we're going to end up with the collapse of the dollar before all this is over, and the collapse of other fiat currencies around the world. Every central bank's going to do the same thing. They can't contract the money supply. That would be catastrophic. So they just have to keep expanding it until it all blows up. There's no other option for the central banks. So you can expect that to be coming. So they just have to keep expanding it until it all blows up. There's no other option for the central banks. So you can expect that to be coming.